You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three.
Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Def Jam Gundy. You may know me as the founder of NBA Injury Report on Twitter. And this is episode 309. Woo! On today's show, we're joined by Drew Steele, a.k.a. Scooter Toots, on Twitter. And we're taking a quick break from draft coverage to keep handing out report cards. On today's show, we discuss Jarrett Jack. We actually meant to discuss Jarrett Jack and Trey Burke. And in fact, we did. But the discussions, as they have been recently, went a little bit long, so we're splitting it up into two episodes. Today's episode is Jarrett Jack. Tomorrow's bonus-sode will be Trey Burke before we release a draft-sode on Thursday about Michael Porter Jr. and Trey Young. That'll be a fun one with a mystery guest. But before we do that, we gotta grade the season of Jarrett Jack. With me to do it, like I just said, is Drew Steele. Y'all must have forgot. Let's hit it. Let's start it. Come on, Marv.
Yes.
So we're taking a break from draft coverage for an episode or two. We'll be right back to it. Don't worry, guys. To do one of my favorite things, and that is be a fat, lazy idiot who tells world-class athletes whether or not they did a good job. And we're going to do that today with regards to Jarrett Jack and Trey Burke. Who do you think is the more interesting character here? Who should we save for last to build up the suspense?
It's got to be Trey Burke.
Yeah, it's got to be. That was a trick question. I was just getting ready to bait you.
There may be some people who are like, we really want Jarrett Jack.
Jarrett Jack's family.
Jarrett Jack's, I was going to say cousin, but qualified as his family, but Jarrett Jack's teammates,
like probably former teammates and stuff. Probably not even Jarrett Jack. He's like, you know what? I'm curious what you guys have to say about Trey. Like, I know me. I'm good with me.
Yeah, that sounds like a Jarrett Jack answer. he's very team first.
He really is. So that is definitely one of his positives, and we like to open these evaluations by discussing positives. If you're talking about Jarrett Jack this past season, what do you think his biggest positive was?
I gotta say, it's his ability to, you know, be very team first and very focused on just kind of getting everyone to do what they were supposed to, especially on offense and even on defense, even though he, you know, he was limited on that then. But just like his ability to just like command everyone's just respect and just lead this team, I definitely think like his biggest plus for this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was undeniable. You saw it all the time. I like to poke gentle fun at him throughout the season with my get it, Innis impersonation, but he was vocal out there. I mean, you need someone who knows what people are supposed to be doing, who can help people get in their spots, and he was always shouting at people in like in a way that was not grating at all. You could tell his teammates all really respect him. He would shout at Kyle to eat glass. That was one of my favorites when Kyle O'Quinn would grab a strong rebound. Eat glass, Kyle! He was always talking on the bench, even though, you know, like, some people say they're okay with taking on a role like this. From all reports, he was told at the beginning of the season, you're a mentor. You know, but not everyone, when they're in that situation, handles it well. And he just seemed completely at peace with himself. A really helpful teammate. You saw him in Frank's ear all the time. He was very active. He was very involved in the game. Like you said, he was always shouting out defensive assignments, even if it was from the bench. So hard to question his like integrity as a teammate and his value there this past season for sure. And something that I think, I'm wondering if you agree with this or not, but as annoying as it was that he played well enough that
Jeff Hornacek thought he had to give him 40 minutes a night for the rest of the season. I do think, I mean, I can't blame him. You're going to take all the playing time they give you, first of all. But I do think it was important for someone, anyone, to steady the ship just a little bit when he did after those first three games of the season. Because I know by the end of the season, you know, we were all worried about not tanking hard enough. Are they losing enough games? But, I mean, let's remember, before the season starts, Kristaps Porzingis does not have a great relationship with the organization. We're very much in flux, even more than we are now, I think, even with his contract a little bit up in the air. But I think we needed the Knicks to show just a little something to, you know, assuage fears that KP would run out of here the second he was a free agent, to show that, you know, they were at least conceivably, imaginably on the horizon of being a little bit good, being close to, like, quasi-contention, at least to the playoffs. And I think Jarrett Jack coming in and making sure the Knicks didn't reach, like, a Phoenix Sunsian level of, you know, three straight 40-point losses or whatever it was, I think that was important just for the health of the franchise, for the relationship between KP and the franchise. I don't want to, you know, like, overblow it too much, but I do think it was a positive and a good thing that that happened.
Generally, I would agree with that. I don't know if people forget, but those first three games, Ramon Sessions was awful, and awful is almost like an understatement.
Yeah.
With that, because, like, if you looked at, I don't have the numbers offhand, but I remember when it first happened, and I was like tweeting out these like on-off numbers, like there were like differentials of like 20 between like offense and defense, like with Ramon Sessions, like it was so dreadful with him on and off the court. Like, it was so polarizing. It was like he needed to stop playing, and you needed someone to kind of like correct everything. And I remember, like, when they said Jarrett Jack was going to be starter, I was like, oh great, right. Jarrett Jack, you know, he's coming off injuries, he looked terrible in the preseason.
He was the last guy they signed, right?
I believe so, yeah. So it was like, it wasn't looking good. They weren't going to throw Frank into the fire just yet.
Right.
So it was like, it sounded like it was going to be a disaster, but he did nothing but, you know, just like great work to like stabilize everything. And I think, even though there's going to be the process purists and the tanking purists who are like, they should have just kept playing Ramon Sessions, or they played Jack too much, or they should have gave minutes to Frank more. And I don't really necessarily believe that minutes equals development.
Sure.
So I don't think like giving like Frank like 30 minutes a game would have been too helpful. So it's like, you had to give those minutes to someone. It's not like this team was like flush with point guard talent at the time. Right. Trey Burke was in the G League. They really had no one else to turn to. And I just thought like the team playing well with hit, you know, with Jack orchestrating everything was, I think serves better long-term than, you know, even like what moving up to the fifth pick of this draft. I mean, right. this is like a two-person draft for the most part. So,
and
even though it's like, it's deep after, you know, 3 to 13, it's pretty deep, but there's like two like bona fide like stars, and everyone else is like could be stars, maybe not. So
yeah, I think that's a fair assessment, and I can't really stress this enough. I mean, on a different angle, keeping on KP here, I mean, it was critical to put like at least the most important thing for this season, I think, was the development of, you know, KP and Frank, the continued development of KP, Frank just getting started in the NBA. But with KP, you had to put a semblance of an NBA offense around him to see if he was capable of being that number one guy, at least to get a good idea. It would have been really difficult if you had just nothing but complete garbage around him. And putting someone in there, and Jack, who was at least able to, you know, make basic reads, be an unselfish player, try to set guys up in their spots. I mean, he did a nice job. He had a 30.3% assist rate, which was 74th percentile for guards. I mean, you know, he did a nice job distributing, and I think that played a key role. And at least he wasn't great for KP, but he at least was competent enough where they had a facsimile of a real NBA offense that he can operate out of, and you could see if you had something there.
No, I hear you. And just to carry on what you said about Jack's passing and just ability to run the offense, he was ninth in my HPPR statistic. He had a 10.17, which was in the 95th percentile. And that was ahead of guys like Kyle Lowry, John Wall, like Ben Simmons. I'm just kind of like going through the list, Russell Westbrook, and so forth. Like, he did a really good job managing the offense, cutting down turnovers, generating assists. And he just did so very, you know, just like the stereotypical, like, veteran. He just made all the right passes. He made smart reads. And he kind of just, like, did his job. And you kind of can't get upset when there wasn't anyone else to really turn to. And he kind of provided at least entertaining basketball until, what, like, Christmas time? Like, right. Knicks have for the past, you know, what, four seasons now?
It's a tradition unlike any other. F the Masters. To round off just kind of what I saw as his on-court positives, I think he had a nice little floater game. I couldn't find, you know, play type information that I had access to for floaters, but we'll talk more about his mid-range game as we get into the negatives, I think.
Yeah.
But he shot 48% on short mid-range shots, which is that kind of floater zone, and that was 93rd percentile. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of that was that he's sort of an average finisher at the rim. He was 60th percentile in shooting at the rim, which is like, oh, you know, all right. But he tended to kind of favor that little pull-up versus taking it all the way, which maybe isn't the greatest for drawing fouls, whatever, but he was at least adept at that. I'll say that. I just want to say I see your floater game, Jared.
I do go off that. I did find floater data on NBA.com.
Sounds like we're talking about the Turlet Bowl. Sorry to get my head in the gutter. Yep. But
which was great. I don't have the exact numbers. I have it on a different computer that I wrote it down on.
Okay.
But he took about, I want to say like 50 or so floaters. I could be wrong, or it could be 70 or 90. I don't know why. So he took anywhere between, let's just say 50 to 90, because, you know, really want to shrink that down.
Coming hard with the facts, Drew. Coming hard with the facts.
Yeah, really hard. But I do remember when I calculated the shooting percentage, and he shot 49.3% on his floater type shots.
Wow.
So it was basically, I added all the shot types that said floater in it. So he shot 49.3% on floaters.
And that's a tough shot. That's not an easy shot. You're on the move. You're not using your guide hand, generally speaking.
It is. I am going to eventually look in to see if I can get more, like, league detail on mm-hmm. who had the best floater. Because the way NBA the stats website does it, it's really convoluted.
Yeah, how did you find it? I looked for, I mean, I didn't, like, exhaust myself, but I looked for a good 10 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, I to be honest, I forget. It was something with, like, I had to go to the splits, and I had to find shooting type, and then I had to, like, I forget.
Yeah, no.
But I'm gonna see if they have, like, my players, like, a player list of different shot types, and I want to see where 49.3% ranks. So I want to know who has the best floater percentage now.
If you had to guess, who would you say it was in the NBA?
That's a tough question. I would say, like, James Harden or Chris Paul.
Yeah, that makes sense. Maybe a Curry, but I don't even feel like I see him take a lot of floaters. He more goes to, like, high off the glass, acrobatic layup kind of things.
Yeah, Curry really just, every time I watch Curry play, it's basically, you know, 30-foot three-pointers or, like, layups. I rarely see him ever take a mid-range shot or floaters or anything. He's just great at both, so why not?
Okay. Do you have any more positives before we move on to negatives?
Not really with positives. I do find something rather interesting with Jack for defensive RPM. I know I cite it a lot for defensive stats, but there aren't too many good defensive metrics, and this is probably mm-hmm. the best one for individuals. But
why do you think, quick conversation for those who may not mm-hmm. be super familiar with defensive RPM, why do you think this is a good individual defensive stat, or as good a one as we have right now?
Well, I would say it's the best of all the bad ones, because there aren't really good defensive stats that really capture it, because a lot of these comprehensive all-in-one statistics, there's usually something called a box score prior. And if you're familiar with that in types of linear regression, you take – I know, I'm going Ooh. Crazy now, but a box score prior is basically you take the different box score statistics and you run a regression with it with a dependent variable. So it's going to be box score based. So that kind of, you know, in the defensive box score stats are just blocks, steals, and defensive rebounds. So it's not really like the best way to capture defense.
Sure.
But defensive RPM does incorporate, you know, on-off statistics and controls for individuals that it has.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask. But, I was going to say, because I find myself favoring on-off, mostly for players who I've watched a lot, because if I feel like I have the context and then I see that, yeah, when they're on, the defense sucks, I'm like, all right, that confirms it kind of thing. Hmm. But that, okay, I didn't realize defensive
box. Yeah, so, the, like, that in so compared, yeah, so there is defensive box plus minus, which is from Basketball Reference.
Mm-hmm.
And no one should ever use that at all to measure defense, because that's only the difference between offensive box plus minus and total box plus minus. So it's not, and those two are based on, you know, a regression of our APM, which is regularized adjusted plus minus. So they're not even running a regression on defensive. That's literally the difference between two box score prior RPM. So like that's to me in that favor. So if you have a large tons of defensive rebounds, for example, you're gonna have a much higher defensive block box plus minus. So
I basically see.
All right. Yeah, so that's to me, that's relative to me, I would just say trash. The improvement of that would be a defensive player impact plus minus. That's from Nylon Calculus. That's from Jacob Goldstein. So shout out to Jacob. He controlled for, he has a luck adjusted aspect of it with on off player team data. So that controls, you know, if a team gets lucky from three, you know, it's not the individual's fault. So like PIPM is like the version of, it's basically what box plus minus should be. So okay, like we should probably be using that more. But defensive RPM is, you know, basically the public version of our APM. Which isn't really publicly available. You really have to dig into the like the stat forums.
Okay.
So I'm probably boring some people, but
I'm curious. I mean, I'm sure you are. No offense to you. People are built differently. Some people are like, oh my god, Drew's really much smarter than I realized. You know, he comes off such a goofy scooter toots sometimes, but he's got the goods. But then there's some people who are like, go back to your country.
Yeah, it's my New Jersey for going back to my country.
Exactly, it's its own world in many ways. But anyway,
it really is.
Jared Jack.
But anyway, so all that, Jared Jack was 52nd of 103 point guards, and he had a negative 0.41. So he wasn't like, you know, he was like just kind of in the middle defensively for defensive RPM, which I find interesting.
I think there are other stats to paint a different, I mean, not different, but a worse picture. I do want to delve a little bit more into negatives. Not too much. But first, just want to pause for just a moment to remind the listeners that you guys are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network in the entire world. Okay, yeah, negatives. I mean, one thing, because I said, I was like, When I do these, I start with first the old memory bank. I hit up the brain meat, and I'm like, what do you remember about these people? And then I list them out, and then I try to see if statistics match up with what I thought, blah, blah, blah. And I wrote down, one of the first things I wrote down was just cannot play defense. And then I looked at his on-off, and they were actually like a little bit better. It was something like a point and a half, according to cleaning the glass, better with him on. And I was like, huh, well, he did play a lot with Kristaps, who, like, had a huge impact, you know, like, famously so, right? Or infamously so. We wanted people like Frank to get a couple more minutes with KP while he was still healthy. So I was like, I need to dig a little bit more. Like, what do I remember? I'm like, I feel like he got burned on every single pick and roll. And then I looked it up. As a pick and roll defender, defending the ball handler, he was in the 11th percentile of points per possession, you know, allowed when defending the pick and roll ball handler. I don't even think he didn't understand the reads. I don't think he didn't give effort, but, you know, he's not that old as far as, like, you know, like, I think LeBron James is the same age as him.
Yeah.
But he's not LeBron James, and he's just run down. I mean, he's 34, but he might as well be 134. Like, when you look at him, you know, his body is well past its prime. Still could kick my ass, obviously, but like, that was a problem. He was a classic fart dog commander for the Knicks. To use a posting and toasting phrase.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with
It was the friendly alliance. Basically bad perimeter defenders on the Knicks who let other defenders score a lot. I forget what the acronym stood for exactly off the top of my head, but yeah.
That's a good one. I really have to say, I enjoy that one. But one thing with America, he and LeBron may be similar in age, but LeBron's never had a major injury, especially like an ACL tear.
Yeah.
Like Jack did. So there's a big difference in that. And also LeBron is, probably like some sort of like genetically engineered sort of like freak when it comes to these things.
I've never seen anything like that in terms of just his physical durability. So that's one extreme.
But Jack wasn't good on defense. I understand that. Like, he was coming off an ACL. He hasn't really played much. And even then, like, point guard defense is really hard anyway in the league now, just the way how the defensive rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is going to get burned. But I felt like he was, wasn't as bad, even though I feel bad because I think you and I do this all the time. We're on a podcast. But, like, he wasn't as bad as Emmanuel Mudiay.
that is correct on a number of levels.
Yeah, which shouldn't be, the case, especially because, Mudiay isn't coming off, injuries, and he's, larger, more athletic. I felt like that was his negative, but I kind of understood, and I wasn't, too upset with it, because he did play with the Porzingis, and who does a good job containing the pick and roll,
right,
for the most part. So, it's a negative, but, it's an understood negative, given, he hasn't played and came off an injury.
Mm-hmm.
And he's facing against, starters. It's not like he's facing against, he's not guarding bench guards.
This is correct. What other negatives can we think of? I've got a couple.
One negative I would potentially point to, but this may actually be a larger issue with kind of just how the Knicks approached offense, especially with Jeff Hornacek, is that Jared Jack's shooting profile wasn't good.
It was, in my notes, I wrote vomit-inducing.
Yeah, it was bad. So just to get an idea for how bad it was, he was second to last in zone true shooting percentage with a 41%. And that's awful for this stat. If you're anywhere near the 40s, you're bad. And his true shooting was 48.9%. So not only wasn't he, he wasn't efficient scoring, and he wasn't taking... he was taking inefficient shots, and he was making them inefficiently. So
yeah,
it was just really bad.
I mean, but to buttress that, 66% of his shot attempts came from the mid-range. 36% of his shot attempts came from long mid-range, both of which were in the 100th percentile for frequency of mid-range and long mid-range shots. No one took a greater percentage of the worst shots in basketball, generically speaking. I know you need to pepper him in there once in a while, but no one took a higher percentage than Jared Jack, which is partially, I think, system. We've talked about on this show a bunch, Jeff Hornacek's insistence that, if you're open, it's fine. But also, I don't know if it's because he's, small. It looked like he struggled with just the distance of it all, to be honest, but just not a good three-point shooter. This past season, 30% from three, but it felt like a soft 30. I could have sworn it was 27% for most of the year, and maybe he got it up there a little bit at the end. And just another version of the stat that you gave, he scored 0.98 points per shot attempt, just talking about his efficiency, and that's 27th percentile. So just he got the team in good position, but he himself, through a combination of just what he is decent at and how the Knicks played, was just really inefficient when he took shots.
Yeah, that obviously kind of limits, puts a really short ceiling on how good the Knicks could have been even this year.
Right.
Despite Jared Jack being such an improvement. Jared Jack was such an improvement over Ramon Sessions. But even then, the team was still capped because he wasn't really a threat out of the pick and roll except for passing.
Yeah.
The defense is fine giving him those mid-range shots. He wasn't really making them even though he took so many of them. And then you could just seal off the passing lane to whoever's running the pick and roll with them, whether it's a pick and pop or Porzingis or a pick and roll with Cantor. So,
that's a good point.
The Knicks were defenses could just say, fine, take this shot. They were so limited at the point guard.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of that was just, which you can't even blame him that much for, his natural limitation. They knew they could just wall off the paint and dare him to beat him. And he tried.
Yeah, exactly. Because
that might have been, honestly, the Knicks' offense was so terrible for basically the entire season, that unfortunately that frequently was one of the better shots they could get in any given possession. Which says a lot about the Knicks, you know?
which I think that I don't, that's why I kind of want to say, like, I don't necessarily think it's that much of a negative for Jack. Like, it is because he didn't shoot well.
Yeah.
But I still feel like this is more of, like, a larger Jeff Hornacek issue. I think for the people who are probably frustrated with Jared Jack, I think you can point that to Jeff Hornacek. And I know we feel like, I think you and I probably harp on him a little bit too much. Like, I do think he wasn't in the best position, like, to put succeed for the Knicks, for Hornacek. Sure. And I feel like I've defended him in some instances, but at the same time, he didn't really make it easy on himself.
No.
So I just wanted to clarify that. Like, I know I feel like I come off as harsh on, like, Hornacek, but, like, he didn't have the best roster to work with anyway. You know, in terms of, like, he had two bigs and Nikanti or Porzingis, and then you don't have a point guard who could, you know, really create much off the dribble. So, like, you're kind of, like, stuck playing, like, this really big post-centric offense, and they weren't really too efficient with that. So,
no. I mean, not in a great spot. Didn't exactly nail the landing either, so...
So, I get, that's probably the extent I'll defend Hornacek, but then there's also the same time he's telling everyone, shoot whatever open shot you have. And it was mainly mid-range shots, and it's like, no. Like, run a play, do something a little more creative than just, take a 17-footer. Like, that's a terrible idea.
Yeah, I respect Timmy even more for fighting through that to shoot 10 threes a game at his 31% three-point shot. just because he knew if you ever got on track, it would actually help them. But I think we've kind of exhausted picking Jarrett Jack apart. I think we've done enough. If you wanted to grade him for this past year, I grade kind of on a scale of what you could reasonably expect from these guys, especially someone like him, someone who came in, you know, just barely made the roster. Like you said, he's coming off a couple serious injuries in a row, wasn't even necessarily going to stick with the team, wound up being, you know, their starting point guard. So for me, I factor all that in. It's not just like, oh, where does he rank in the league? It's more about, like, what is his potential and did he fulfill it? So I'm just curious, given those parameters, what do you think kind of grade you would give him?
I grew very partial to Jared Jack, so he gets an A for this season.
Yeah. I gave him an A-. I think because of the... I don't know. Why did I give him an A-? I do think it's interesting. Like, you mentioned a couple times when you do your... what's the HPPR stat?
Yes,
That, like, he had... Because Jared Jack had sort of a high turnover percentage, but I guess a lot of these other guys that you referenced, I feel like they just have a higher turnover percentage than people realize, because Jack did turn the ball over a decent amount overall. Like, he had a 15.5% turnover rate, which is 29th percentile. But that's based on, that turnover rate is based on of possessions you used. So maybe the fact that he's not a high usage guy makes that higher here, but not as big a factor in your HPPR. I'm trying to reconcile those two things.
That could be the case. Like, I'm looking at the total turnovers just for the top 10 of guys. So, like, he had 115 listed turnovers. So, and then just to kind of give some idea,
that's not that much.
So, it isn't too much. I mean,
it's less than 1.5 a game or whatever, right? I mean,
I think so. Yeah, something like that. So, like, it wasn't awful. For the grand scheme of things, just if you go the next couple guys down, like, John Wall had 158 turnovers to 393 assists.
Okay.
And then Jarrett Jack had 348 assists. So, I mean, like, so it's not, you know, too bad. Like, it made sense. Like, I get how you're saying, like, he turned the ball over a number of times, but it wasn't, you know, a lot of guys kind of turned. Even guys like Rajon Rondo was first in the league in HPPR with a 17.2, and he turned the ball over 151 times, but he also had 533 assists.
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. All right, you give him an A. I give him an A-, because I'm a little bit of a dick. Next year, what do you hope to see from him next year? Do you want him on the team?
I mean, I just want him on the team because I like using my thing that I gave him, Sweaty Morpheus. So I love just having Sweaty Morpheus on the bench, just, you know, yelling to crash the boards and to get it and all that stuff. Like, I just want him around the team because I just like him.
Yeah.
So
you don't think that's like, he's an acceptable veteran presence that you don't mind. You don't feel like you need every single roster spot to develop some young guy.
Yeah, no, bring him on. He's great.
Yeah.
Max him. I'm very pro Jared Jack.
Maxim, I would like to see him come back. You know, obviously he wouldn't come back for big money either as a player or as an assistant coach, but I feel like he said he still kind of wants to play, so we'll see what happens. I want for Jarrett Jack what would make him the most happy, basically.
I agree. Whatever's best for him. If he wants to go play for a championship team, man deserves it.
Yeah. I basically love him and want all the good things in the world for him. And hilariously, if you guys, I can't let his review go without, I forget, I think it was Friend of the Sodes, Yaron Weitzman, who wrote for Bleacher Report, the story. Yeah, it was. I talked about this with him on the show. Jarrett Jack is like everyone's favorite guy in the NBA. And
yes, I read that story. So that was a great story.
Yeah,
by Yaron. Shout out.
Yeah, shouts to Yaron. And not only that, but like you go over to his house and like Chief Keef is there and stuff. Like all these guys.
Yeah,
rappers love him, and he seems so like quiet and unassuming, but apparently he's got kind of like a chill party side that he like knows exactly how far to go, you know, unlike some other people. Mm-hmm. Like a J.R. Smith kind of vibe, you know. So just a wonderful all-around human being, Jarrett Jack. All right, it's time to discuss, what are we talking about, Trey Burke. Nice. That's how I end these shows now. Nice. Anyway, another wonderful conversation with Drew Steele. I apologize for all that stuff about RPM, RAPM, RISD, blubbity, blubbity, blubbity. I'm just kidding. I like talking about stats. Sometimes I get a little bit lost in the terminology, just like you guys. I'm a human. I know you look at me as somewhat infallible. I couldn't even get that one out. All right, that's enough. That's it. That's the rest of this show. It's done. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks if you have not already. Tell your friendly neighborhood statistician about Locked On Knicks. They'll like this episode with all Drew's goings-ons. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks or NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. Spay and do to your pets. If it's yellow and a bell over brown, put it down. Always hot and bust the water. Take that banana and tune in tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks. Peace.